We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, welcome in to another episode of Buzz Beat. Happy Super Bowl Sunday, I suppose, is in order for those who celebrate, or for those like myself who are going through the Memphis-Charlotte film from Saturday night to see how some of the new pieces were being used for the Hornets. But I'm Brian Geisinger. I'll be joined on today's pod by my guy Spencer Percy. Richie is here producing in the background, and we are here to, among other things, break down the 2024 NBA trade deadline, which was one of the most active trade periods we've seen and possibly ever for the Charlotte Hornets. But Spencer, how are you doing on this cold, rainy Sunday here in the state of North Carolina?
I'm great, BG. Thank you. Great to be here. Look, happy Super Bowl Sunday. You know, I'm thrilled mostly, you know, because the Hornets won last night and have a brand new roster and all that's really fun. And it seems like they, you know, handled the trade deadline the way they should have. We'll get into all that. But you know what makes me happiest? They brought back a legend last night, a legend that the past ownership group had a chance to bring back and they didn't do it. But we know him as Crash. You might know him as Gerald Wallace. But to see him back in the building last night, seems to be doing great. Very grateful to have the opportunity to come back to the Queen City and be celebrated by the fans. You know, Gabe and Rick, round of applause. Like, bringing Crash back and celebrate. Like, yeah, let's lean into our past a little bit. That made me as happy as anything that I've seen that's related to Bobcats, Hornets, Charlotte, whatever, basketball in a long time, BG. I have some really fond memories of watching Gerald Wallace play for the Charlotte Bobcats in college, mostly. So that really warmed my heart. I don't know. Yeah. I just wanted to just round of applause for Gerald Wallace.
Gerald Wallace was an awesome basketball player. And yeah, really, since NBA basketball returned to Charlotte, one of the premier players the state has seen, the region has seen, and a guy that clearly meant a lot to a lot of different people in the fan base. And I think it's okay to sort of like lean into the sort of like Bobcats 1.0, 2.0, you know, rosters and former players.
Weren't like that incompetent. There were some really good teams.
They went to the playoffs twice.
I mean, twice.
That's,
yep.
That's more than the Hornets have since they rebranded everything. So in probably about the same amount of time, give or take a year or two here or there. So like it's they were a laughing. They were certainly like a laughing stock in certain ways. But like, I think that's okay if you can like not take yourself too seriously, and you're also the arrow is sort of like pointing upward. Which after a tough half season here, tough season and a half, does seem to be like the Hornets are taking sort of like baby steps, conservative baby steps in the right direction as far as like the roster and asset management goes, but. Just focusing on Crash again, very, very cool to see him play. And I even the feed of the broadcast that I was watching, I actually got the Memphis broadcast, not Charlotte's. And he was they made note of him during the broadcast too. Like the Grizzlies had a little, the Grizzlies broadcast had a little, you know, Gerald Wallace segment as well, which is pretty cool. And again, sort of small market team in a similar region, showing a little love to a guy who really meant a lot to people in this fan base who have stuck around from the Gerald Wallace days. Like,
yeah,
they deserve some nostalgia, like serotonin hits every now and then. And it seems like last night may have been just that.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. You know, in a way that makes me feel like a loser, but in also in a way that matters, like for what you just, you know, what you just said, guys, fans that have been around for a while. If you're a younger listener, I would encourage you to, it sounds stupid, but go look up some Gerald Wallace, Steven Jackson, Raymond Felton, Bobcats highlights. Those were some teams that could play a little bit. So anyways, all right, I digress, but I really appreciated that last night. BG, trade deadline. Where do you want to start here? There's a lot to discuss.
Well, we should also note that Richie, our co-host, he put out another episode of BuzzBeat that hit BuzzBeat Plus subscribers accounts earlier today, today being February 11th. That was done with Alex Spears. I have not had the chance to listen to that yet, but I will get to that at some point, either later today or tomorrow. That I'm sure went into more of the Gordon Hayward transaction. We've discussed the Terry Rozier one. So I think for us, where it would be good to start would be on the PJ Washington trade with the Dallas Mavericks. And then we can sort of think about the next, like sort of like a future outlook for the franchise here, and even touch on probably some of these other transactions and sort of where we could see things going from here. Because this was the last month, and really this week especially, they did more transactions than I thought they were going to do. That's honest. I mean, I've thought maybe one, maybe two, to see three separate trades and two incoming first round picks in total, plus some fringe rotation players is interesting. So yeah, we'll just say we can go ahead and get into Dallas, but before we sort of talk about the PJ transaction as a move, I would just like to say, like, a quick salute to PJ Washington and his near 5 years of service for the franchise. He was an important rookie player, sort of like one of the few glimmers of hope in like the immediate like post Kemba timeline. And it didn't turn into much other than, I suppose, some, like, in terms of a team wide thing, it didn't turn into much aside from two exciting seasons at the start of LaMelo's career. But PJ was asked to play a bunch of different roles all over the court, offensive responsibility. And I thought he turned himself into a really nice player. He earned a good second contract. And now he gets to go back to what, his hometown team, and play next to Luka Doncic and, hopefully make a playoff run with the Mavs. So would just like to say salute to him. I think if you listen to the show, my co-hosts probably know this, like, I was a big PJ fan. Like, I believed in him. And part of that stance was, I think he has the ability to be like an impact guy and be on the court in playoff moments. And we'll see. Like, it does seem like that belief will be put to the test in the next coming months with Dallas. But just wanted to get that in before we sort of like talk about the mechanics of the deal. But yeah, Spencer, any thoughts on PJ, his career, and then we can even segue just into talking about the move.
Well, no, I mean, I echo exactly what you said, BJ. I was looking this morning, like, it's so crazy. I was like, wait, we drafted this guy in 2019? Like, that's so wild. Like, you know,
a long time ago, man.
It still felt like it was like 2 years ago, right? And it was 2019, so that was weird. But look, he developed in Charlotte. You know, I think James Borrego did a great job with PJ Washington. I think Steve Clifford did, you know, used him obviously in a way, in a much different way, but did a nice job as well. You know, the one thing that kind of bums me out about PJ's time in Charlotte is that he was overtaxed so much as a small ball five under Borrego for such a long time. And, you know, obviously that spit out a lot of good offensive numbers for the Hornets during that time. I'm not sure it benefited PJ Washington's NBA development holistically. Maybe as much as, you would think in the moment. But look, he's a good player. He's going to be really important for the Mavs. He had a great debut last night. You know, they blew the Thunder out, and he was really good in that game. So I wish him nothing but the best. And it's always good to see a guy that you drafted turn into something that is really of value. And the proof in the pudding is what the Hornets got back for him. I mean, that's what the NBA really thought of PJ Washington, and rightfully so, because he's a guy that can guard up, he can guard down, he can play multiple positions on offense. I mean, this is a versatile player who's, like you said, going to have some really good offense or really good playoff moments.
I think his ability to work screen and roll, screen pop with Luka, double drag stuff with Luka and Derek Lively or Kyrie, Derek Lively. And then we've seen PJ's ability to be a playmaker, a passer on the short roll. And just think about how many times Luka forces teams to put two on the ball, you know, to hedge, to show, to trap, to blitz them. PJ has the build, has the chance to be a release valve for Dallas. And he's shown the ability to do that while not exclusively playing like small ball five. Like he's done that when he's been in at the four and there's another center in the dunker spot. And that could really help if he's playing a lot with Derek Lively and now Daniel Gafford, who's also with the Mavericks as well. So I think that is something that he could really be a nice piece for Dallas going forward. And it should be noted, like when they signed that new contract or PG to that contract last summer, I believe Richie and I did a reaction pod after that. And I don't want to speak for Richie, but I know I'm pretty sure both of us were sort of like, yes, absolutely, this is a good deal for the Hornets, in part because like he has trade value. The deadline proved it, you know, that absolutely that guy was able to get a, you know, pretty nice return for the Hornets. That deal in totality was Dallas got a 2024 second, a 2028 second in PJ from the Hornets in return for Grant Williams, an offseason signing gone wrong for the Mavs. Seth Curry, you know, homecoming to Charlotte in a 2027 first-round pick that I believe is only top two protected.
Yep.
Pretty good piece to have at your disposal. Plus, you get a guy. I think one of the things that sort of struck me broadly from the trade deadline with the Hornets was some of the contracts they picked up. Like Curry, Micic from Oklahoma City. We'll see what Davis Bertans does with his ETO as well. My guess is he will probably not exercise that. I'd be curious to know. I mean, 16.
I'd be surprised.
I think he would take that. But I say all of that to say that the Hornets probably have some salaries that they could package, and they've got a guy in Grant who they can use to like they might be able to rehab Grant Williams' value. He absolutely, like, I think right now you could say Grant maybe he doesn't have positive trade value, maybe he does with certain teams, but you could have him come in, play next to LaMelo, Brandon Miller. He hits some shots, you know, he shows his defensive versatility. He's got several years left on that contract. He's still pretty young. Like, you might be able to get something for Grant down the line too. So I think the Hornets did, the front office did a nice job, not just getting back two first-round picks in all of these deals, but getting back some salaries and even a player in Grant that I think has some that could be used either to facilitate a trade or to build a trade around going forward.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, or you know what? Or he's a part of the core. Or he fits
that too. Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like,
that's great too.
He's still young. He's under a very fair contract. Like, he's not a direct facsimile to PJ Washington, but
it's very similar. It's very similar.
Very similar skill set, you know, very similar kind of role. So, you know, I like this move for Charlotte. BG, we're touching on the contracts that they brought in, which I think is probably one of the most important points to look. There's two really important points to look at when considering how the Hornets handled this trade deadline. What you just mentioned is number one, the contract. So if you look at it from this perspective, Grant Williams, Mišić, Cody Martin, Nick Richards, obviously they didn't bring those guys in. I'm just doing some math here. Richards, Seth Curry, and Davis Bertans. Those five players almost come up to $40 million in salary.
Max
so,
slot.
Well, you know, I mean, whatever.
Yeah.
But the point, your point is well taken in terms of, like, the Hornets have salaries to put into deals if the right thing comes to their doorstep. And that could be as early as this summer, you know, before before the draft. It could be the next trade deadline, but that's point number one. You know, I think point number two is the Hornets handled this trade deadline as almost a pre-free agency, if you will. So, you know, I do expect that Mišić, Bertans, Grant Williams, these guys are going to be part, Trey Mann, obviously, are going to be part of the rotation going into next season. That's four players, and the Hornets only have one roster spot available right now. So they really looked at what was out there this summer, number one, and number two, like, who's actually going to want to come here if we're operating as a team above the cap, which they're going to now, and, like, who are we going to throw our full mid-level exception at that would actually like to play here? So they built, I think, in a lot of ways, their rotation going into next season at this trade deadline, which is, boy, oh boy, is that it's not like galaxy brain creativity, but it's not something we're used to, right?
Yeah.
In Charlotte, under the ownership we've been used to, under the management we've been used to, you just like to see thinking outside the box a little bit.
Yeah, no, I mean, the last 3 weeks, you know, certainly very much enjoyed watching and covering Terry Rozier, PJ Washington, Gordon Hayward. You absolutely want to thank those guys for their service with the franchise, all that sort of stuff. But, like, those guys being, like, tools the franchise used to sort of, like, reconfigure itself and just do sort of, like, very obvious team building. Nothing, like you said, they weren't splitting the atom on any of this stuff, man. But it's really the only way to go about doing your business when you're a small market team and the writing is on the wall, as it has been for years now, really, that they needed to reset. You know, I think the rest of this season becomes very interesting for Charlotte because, one, just from a standpoint of watching only one game so far, and I know Memphis is a MASH unit. They're not very good at this point. Jaren Jackson Jr. is really their only, like, starter still healthy and available for them. But just watching that game alone, seeing the additions in terms of, like, on-ball creativity, on-ball handling, the usage, it is kind of amazing how little Charlotte was getting out of, and I know injuries played a role in this stuff too, and I love Ish Smith, but just, like, Ish Smith, James Bouknight, Frank Ntilikina, Like the reserve guards, I mean, there was just no shot creation.
It's like
they were using Ishmael as a screener. You know what I mean?
It's like the theory of relativity, but in basketball terms, it's like, oh my gosh, like you just watch Mišić like be able to keep his dribble, go around and pick and roll, get downhill, and make a very simple like cross court to the corner pass. Like, and he's really, really good. I'm not trying to water down his skill set, but like it's like, oh my gosh, like we really had no doubt on this roster.
And we have also been saying for years now, like we wanted to see Charlotte take the backup point guard role seriously. And now I think you've got a couple of guys in Mišić and Mann that you can go into next season feeling, I don't know if like confident is the right word, but like feeling like pretty excited good about,
you're going LaMelo, you got Trey Mann, you got Mišić, like all of a sudden you got multiple guards that can play. And, you know, not to mention, we still got McGowan's. We still got Nick Smith Jr. Like all of a sudden the backcourt's like,
it's young and there's some
gold deep.
And there's some upside there. I really liked Mann a lot in the 2021 draft. In fact, one of the last pods I did with Lee, our other co-host now with Buzz B, when he was still doing the Wish Carolina podcast, was he and I did a pod on Trey Mann, actually, like in the summer, like pre-draft summer of 2021. Like I liked his creation upside a lot as a prospect coming out of Florida. He just hasn't had the opportunity to show it. OKC just had so many good guards in front of him. It felt like not identical, but sort of similar to like what happened to Kyra Lewis in New Orleans, where like another guy who comes in and you're sort of like big things are expected. Then all of a sudden, just like this wave of other
flood of talent.
Trade and, you know, like bringing in like one veteran in a trade and then a couple of draft cycles. And all of a sudden, and even last night, I mean, I don't think Mann had like an amazing game against Memphis, but just seeing his wiggle with the basketball in the third quarter, he ran like empty side pick and roll with Nick Richards. And he did the classic Trey Mann, like he started driving right, stopped on a dime, went behind his back to his left hand, got downhill, and then like in traffic hit Richards for a dive and a finish at the rim. And I'm sorry, like Charlotte didn't have that. It didn't have that on the roster.
Team high nine assists in his first game.
They just didn't have that on the roster as recently as like 2 days ago or 3 days ago or whatever. So pretty exciting there. Like we'll see. Like, and if Mann just ends up being just sort of like a flashy, like, you know, backup or whatever, like that's fine too. But like it was at least like an upside bet that I kind of liked from the front office to grab. And it's good for Trey Mann because like it wasn't gonna happen in Oklahoma City. So like you may as well try to start fresh somewhere else.
And to build upon that, like the Hornet, it was such a low risk. Like, I really didn't think they were going to get anything for Hayward. Trey Mann is obviously the one piece that comes back. I mean, it's, you know, a few other contracts, and then it's 2 seconds that probably aren't going to matter that much. But Trey Mann, so he's still in his rookie contract. As long as he doesn't, like, get a lot worse, I would say it's a pretty good bet that the Hornets, who now own his bird rights, will re-sign him at a value contract.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? It means there's another contract to throw into, you know, some kind of future trade. And if you look down, you know, I mean, you just look at their payroll. I mean, LaMelo's the only guy under contract until 29. There's literally no other player on this roster under contract past 2027, you know, past the season of 2027. So it's just another asset to throw into a future deal if things start breaking. Not even the right way, just like the way they should, right? Just like if you simulated this thing 100 times, the way that it would simulate 85. So, you know, that was a very smart move, I thought, for the Hornets. And again, I really didn't think they were going to get anything for Hayward's contract. I will say, BG, I find it like, whatever. I mean, this is the way that like national media works, but like, everyone drooling all over themselves about how good this was for the Thunder.
After they've been like probably like, you know, talking down on Hayward and the Hornets for a while, is that sort
just,
of like what they're getting
really
at?
It really makes you like scratch your head. Like, I think it was fine for the Thunder, but like,
I think this was way better for Charlotte.
Yeah.
Considering like who was going to trade anything for a $30 million contract? I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyways, just a side tangent.
And for Charlotte to get any sort of, and I know they're, it's pretty like middling, like second round. I don't think either pick profiles as like a super high second round pick. Like Houston's, like in previous years, a Houston second round pick might be kind of appealing. That sort of is a little bit less so now that they're better and they're going for the playoffs and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, for Charlotte to be able to pry any future picks out of Sam Presti's hands for a $30 million expiring contract guy that, like, I'm not sure if he would have even played again. Like, if he hadn't been traded, like, who knows if that guy even gets back on the court, you know what I mean, the rest of the season.
I mean, what's the point here? Yeah.
He was healthy. Like, right. That was the thing. It was like, I mean, they've been so, like, closed-doored with, like, you know, injury information.
Look, I'll go ahead and say it. I bit my tongue. I know I've told you guys this, but I bit my tongue. He's not in Charlotte anymore. Word on the street was that was really difficult situation for the Hornets to deal with, from the medical staff to the front office. I'm not going to reveal everything, but that the Hayward Charlotte thing was very, very frustrating from the Hornets' point of view. That is a fact, and so we'll just leave it there.
Yeah. And again, I mean, the pieces add up now if it's sort of saying like, oh no, he hasn't played in weeks, months, whatever. But yeah, he's ready to contribute to a postseason. It's like,
yeah, it's like, oh, he's ready to play. It's like, so, how did the Hornets not do great in this?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Yeah. Like, so I don't know. I think if you look in a vacuum, what is nice is that if you look in a vacuum at each separate trade, all of them like look pretty good. And then if you pan out, because when Div was on with us a few weeks ago, one of the things we talked about was just like a lack of cohesion and vision with the franchise, where it was like, if you panned out, you took a 20,000 foot view and you looked at every transaction the Hornets have made the last 5 years, or even, even the last 2 years or whatever, there was so little consistency. It was sort of like hard to find. It felt like the front office and coaching staff were on different, totally different wavelengths. You know what
There's
I mean?
There's no way to tell what the plan actually
is. And all of these deals make sense, right? They're all logical. You got picks back. You got some, young player upside bets. And then you got some guys that could either stay around with you for a little bit or, some salaries to involve to be a player at the 2025 deadline. I do think that's not to jump off topic here or whatever. I know we're sort of just rambling all over, so it's fine. But like, I think it is a big deal for Charlotte to, I think this is the approach they will take for whatever it's worth, that like that pick that they owe now to San Antonio, it's lottery protected for each of the next two seasons. I think it's very important that they hang on to that or sort of like do what they try their best to sort of hang on to it. I do think that's a good idea, because if not, then one of the picks that you got back at the deadline this year sort of, ends up wiping, you essentially lose in terms of just like what the franchise has, you end up losing one of those. So I sort of like the idea of like, if they're going to do stuff to sort of like improve the future odds as opposed to just like improving the roster for next season, I would like for them to sort of like hold off until the deadline next year to produce one of those types of trades. But they have a lot of flexibility now here, which is nice and sort of speaks to having a series of options. I just think it would be important to keep an eye on that 2025 pick. And then like once that's done and that gets converted to 2 seconds to San Antonio, most likely, then I think even more sort of like options open up with the franchise too. I think there's like other directions you can take it in, and you see where Brandon Miller is in a couple of years and that type of stuff, or who you get in the 2024 draft, like all of that stuff will factor in.
Yeah, I mean, extremely well said. I mean, you nailed it. Like it's a true holding pattern kind of mode right now for the Hornets, and you want Brandon Miller to keep coming along, and LaMelo's under contract until the end of the 2029 season. So like, and the rest of the roster is just like complete guess. So yes. You laid that out perfectly. So do you want to talk about the Dallas trade, the PJ Washington trade?
Yeah, let's do it.
So what I found interesting, and again, back to like the national media thing, yeah, there was some thought out there that Dallas like nailed the trade deadline. I think they did fine. I mean, Gafford's a good player. I think he definitely makes them better at the backup five immediately. Obviously, we talked about PJ Washington earlier. He's going to help them, but you cannot talk me into Dallas winning the trade with Charlotte with PJ Washington. Like I just, there's no way. Top two protected pick the same year that Luka has a player option. And if things don't go right from between now and then, like all bets are off with that pick.
They're pretty leveraged in terms of picks that they have, that they've given up too. And by the way, Richie's saying in the chat here, it looks like, I guess Draymond Green on his podcast, shared a similar point of view. I should say, Kevin Pelton of ESPN, I think also did not love the trade deadline for the
If Draymond Green agrees with me, like I did, I'm gonna sleep well tonight. That makes me feel better.
but no. I thought it was to get that pick. You made a good note on sort of like the timeline with Luka. It just, there's a chance that, like, you know, who knows, maybe in the next couple of years Dallas sort of like figures out, and to me, they feel like they're in kind of a holding pattern until they can get another star that is sort of like able to, if not sort of like on the same like age timeline as like Luka, is just like a little bit more dependable than Kyrie. And so because of, until that happens, like you could see it, the foundation in Dallas doesn't seem like super solidified, and because of that, like, you could be looking at a much different roster. One that could be needing to rebuild at some point in the next couple of years too, and doesn't have a lot of, you know, does not have a lot of picks currently at its disposal. So yeah, I thought it was a good return for PJ, and only top two protected is a nice bit of business for the Hornets there. It's not a guarantee, but the way we think about these transactions, and where people are sort of like, I think there's like a lot of focus sort of on picks and the opportunities that draft picks provide for going forward. I do think you have to really do like a bad job to be the team selling, I think, for people to be like, no, from a value standpoint, this is bad. You know, this is bad for you. You can do it. Like, you absolutely can do it. And I think even the Detroit Pistons of the last couple of years, like, you could probably cherry pick a few examples out of that. But like, you're losing the best player in the transaction, but because of what you're getting in return and because of how we like grade these things, generally speaking, like you do have the better odds of sort of like looking like the winner, I think, at least in terms of how we sort of tend to grade these things.
Yeah. And I totally hear what you're saying right now. And I always, the whole like trade grade phenomenon like always really annoys me, because again, relative, like one team's perspective is totally different than another team's. So to grade something in a vacuum just really doesn't make any sense at all. And so I mean, I think Charlotte is the clear winner here because of where they are, and because, you know, and what I was getting ready to say a second ago is, you know, I thought Zach Lowe really laid it out very well. Since the Jalen Brunson disaster, like, Dallas has just been chasing their tail. They've just been like making these trades to make up for past sins, and we're not going to walk through them all right now, but like they can't get everything aligned at the same time. It's like, make one bad decision, make a decision, you know, to bring in a good player like PJ Washington, but because you made a past decision that didn't work out, Grant Williams in that case, right? So it's just a constant churn of like, what are we doing here? Which is why I just really love that 2027 top two protected pick, because you can't talk me into that Luka is not late at night in his room. He might not say it to anybody, but it's like, what am I doing here? What are we doing? When are we going to get this right? Like, you know, you just can't talk me into that's not going through his mind. And look, 2027 is 3 years from now, so a lot can happen between now.
And I think it's worth mentioning too, like, Look, I hope Luka has a plays his entire career in Dallas, right? I mean, I think like that would be great. But
I hope he doesn't.
I hope he leaves.
Yeah, before 20. Yeah. I get that too. I had a point here I was gonna make, and now I'm blanking on it. One other thing I did want to say was, it's important to note too that like when you've committed to the backcourt of Luka and Kyrie, you have to like nail your other team building pop. Like you really have to figure out your like wing defense. You have to figure out your shooting. I think Lively is obviously like a great piece for them at center, but you have to think about how you want to guard the ball. Like in a way, like Rozier and LaMelo, like the way Charlotte had to think about team building or should have been thinking about team building around those guys, like it's going to be hard for you to guard the ball. It's going to be hard for you to stay in front of things. You're going to have to find point of attack defense in the forward room. That guy's going to have to be able to shoot, not like need the ball. Like there's all those sorts of things you have to consider. And man, yeah, it just does feel like Dallas is sort of just chasing here. And you could see them, they could look up one day. And oh, the point I was going to make was, think about every time like LeBron left the team, I guess you could say this with Durant, anytime it's like a top 10 guy. And I think LeBron is like a good facsimile for Luka, because when you have a guy like that, so much of your team build is sort of like, how do we get the right pieces around this guy, that like once they leave, and assuming they leave for nothing, because you're probably not trading them for like a haul beforehand, because you just got to like try to cling to something until it's, you know, absolutely over. It takes you longer to reset, I guess is what I'm saying. Like there's fewer things there that are ready to be in, because everything's just been tailored to amplifying and putting the best roster around this one player. And then when they leave potentially for nothing, then it's very difficult to sort of like, it takes time to reorganize basically. And I can see a certain thing happening with Luka in Dallas if he were to leave.
Yeah. It takes a certain ownership group to have a superstar like that in this league and to leave fruit on the tree, right? Like to make a terrible analogy. It's like an apple tree, and it's ready to harvest when the superstar is great. But by the time that superstar, and you haven't reached your expectations on, you know, halfway through their supermax contract or even a little bit before that, like that, there's nothing going to be left on the apple tree. And it feels like Dallas is getting dangerously close to that line. So, but whatever, I don't care. I hope they cross that line and we get that 2027 pick.
Yeah.
Or what I was going to pitch to you, BG, is of these three new players that Charlotte just brought in, well, five, I guess, technically, but some of them are just contracts. What player are you most excited about? And I'll even, let's run down them real quick. So Grant Williams under contract until 2027. The most he's going to make is about 14.5, a little shy of that $1 million in the last year of his deal. Let's see. Mišić under contract until the end of the 2026 season. $8 million that year. Seth Curry, $4 million next year, and then he expires. We'll see. I can see them bringing him back. We talked about Trey Mann earlier. Which of these guys, Davis Bertans, sorry, is the other one, $16 million next year, early termination option that he controls. I would be surprised if he doesn't go ahead and sign up for $16 million next year. Which one of these guys, considering talent, age, and contract, are you like, all right, I could see this being a really good thing for Charlotte long term?
I think all of the, you could try to build a case for any of the guys. I think three sort of like jump out most. I think you can sort of probably write off Seth pretty quickly. I will say like Davis Bertans, in the Memphis game, they ran like a little screen to screen or baseline out of bounds play. And this, you know, 6'11 Latvian sniper went flying off of a pin down for three and he drained it and was like, now that's something new. That's something
not
new
used
there.
To that.
Not used to that. I was like, I know. Like, I look, as Steve Jones on the Dunker Spot would call him, Dave Burt. There's some limitations with Dave Burt, but man, he can shoot. He's a shooter. You know, for me personally, I would say Trey Mann. I think you can certainly make a case for a few different guys. I like Mišić. Grant is probably like would be my number two most exciting guy for this group, because hybrid front court player, has shot the ball well at times, You know, it seems like he could be a nice fit playing, you know, playing mostly at the four, but some five, give you some shooting, some passing, can guard a bunch of different guys. He's super strong, good processor of the game. And so I see a role for him, and also, or potentially just like a, you know, down the line him being another piece for Charlotte to flip. But I think Mann's just the creativity, the change of pace, the handle, the step back shooting, the passing vision. Like he has
the
not
athleticism put with him. Yeah. I don't think that gets talked about enough with Trey Mann. He's a really good athlete.
Crazy takeoff dunks. Like, yeah. Like,
oh my God.
Live dribble, yeah. Like in traffic. Yeah. Even going back to Florida. So, and I think that stuff is rare and it's harder to find, and it may not come to fruition. Like Grant's pretty bankable at this point. Like he's an NBA rotation player at the wing. So that's something of value. But Mann's upside, I think, is what excites me most, I should say.
I totally agree with you. I mean, we are aligned there. I think it in his like physical profile position, 6'3", point guard, you know, ball first kind of guy. Like, I don't know. I just feel like you don't see that many guys in the NBA anymore, like that are that athletic at that position. They're more like bombers, right? Yeah, they're more like from way downtown kind of guys. Like, I love Mann because I think you can – he can play with a Mišić, right? He can play with a guy that is going to be your true, quote-unquote, point guard, right, and play next to him. And you're going to have some defensive issues there, but he's athletic enough and crafty enough off the ball. And he's a live body, right? Like, that's the thing about Trey Mann that I really, really like is that he can be a live body. So he's not – he can play more positions than one, not often, but he can. And his athleticism to me is what is the most untapped.
Yeah, it's that plus the handle. And he's not just a straight line drive guy, I think, which is pretty cool. Like he gets into tight spaces with the handle. He can bend a defense. He's got the step back timing and rhythm down. That was like one of the things he was so good at as a prospect in Florida too. He was like one of the best step back shooters heading into the 2021 draft class. And like all of the intel, I'd be curious to see what Alex Spears, if he and Richie talked about him on the other pod, like, but all the reporting out of Oklahoma City, all the chatter was that like, man was a workaholic that was always in the gym. And like, then maybe that doesn't mean anything. But I do think Charlotte could use some of that in town. And it's like, if it is going to click with Trey Mann, it seems like he's going to try to do everything he can to maximize his odds. So I'm excited to have that kind of like ball handling talent in the room. And I could see him playing with a lot of different guys on the roster for stretches, including LaMelo. Like, defensive limitations, exactly. No doubt, but like that lets LaMelo get off the ball. You have multiple creative ball handlers and play him with Miller. Like, there's just a lot of stuff you can do that is exciting.
What do you think about Mann as number one, just like shot form from outside? Number two, as a catch and shoot guy. I don't know what his numbers are, but like, what do you think about eye test wise about him?
I would need to study the spot up catch and shoot stuff a little bit more. But the step back stuff, like when he's able to like, he's like, he goes right to left on the pullback move. It looks awesome. Like, it looks really good.
It looks very fluid.
It's looked good since his sophomore season at Florida, you know, like, and that's really exciting too. Again, it may not work out, but if you're taking flyers on guys, a 6'3", 6'4", athletic point guard that wants to pass but has like legit step back game, or potentially legit step back game, like there's maybe something there, and that's something Charlotte hasn't had in like the sort of like backup guard role since Devontae, right? I mean, they haven't had that kind of like on ball, and I mean Devontae's smaller, not as athletic, you know, but like that type of like, oh, you can bring this guy in off the bench, and all of a sudden a defense has to like think about that. They have to react to the gravity or the passing that this person brings when they enter the game. So I can't wait to see him more, both on and off the ball.
I'm really excited to see him play with LaMelo and Mišić play with LaMelo. I'm obviously more excited to see Trey Mann play with LaMelo. to just see how that operates, to see if we can get LaMelo off the ball more, you know, with Trey Mann. But anyways, like, again, it goes back to what we were saying earlier. The backcourt, all of a sudden, like overnight, is pretty damn deep. Not deep with, like, you know, great talent, but whatever. Like, you're going to take on one or two injuries a year, and now there's just stuff there. And I would say that up until the trade deadline this season, like, Charlotte's backcourt was maybe the worst backcourt in, like, NBA history.
It was pretty rough.
It was bad.
It was bad. There was one game. Oh, man, I wish I could remember it. We did a pod, I don't think right after, I think like the following morning. And it was just amazing to see how much stuff Charlotte was having to try to do to get like Terry Rozier a shot in the pick and roll. Just like double screen into another screen into a ghost screen with Ish Smith. And it was like, they have to work so hard to get a terrible shot.
Just like, throwing bodies out of a pass dispenser to come to a screen from the baseline. Yeah.
Just unreal. And I think it's whether this was like intended this way or this happened sort of just like by virtue of them just bringing new players in, whatever. Mm-hmm. We've talked about this before, but like, in my opinion, the best sort of like LaMelo backcourt builds during his tenure was his like rookie year, where you had Gordon Hayward, Devontae Graham, Malik Monk, Terry Rozier, and LaMelo Ball. You had a collection of guys who could do it.
Right.
Miles Bridges, who we probably should touch on before the episode is over here too, as he remains on the roster. But all of a sudden you look around and look, I know it's not the same talent level overall. These guys are generally, you know, they're younger, but you look out and like Nick Smith, Trey Mann, Brandon Miller, Misic, LaMelo, all of a sudden you're like, okay, they have a bunch of guys who actually can operate a pick and roll. And all you really need is for like I think Nick Smith and Trey Mann are different players with different strengths. All you need, if one of those guys pops, You just need like one of the like the small creative guards to pop, and then you've really got something too. So I like them sort of like improving their odds a little bit as far as the like back end of the young guard rotation looks, and McGowan's too. They played McGowan's in much more of like a catch and shoot role, but like in a catch and go role. But he definitely has the potential to be 6'6" and can run a pick and roll. Like there might be something there too.
If McGowan's can like somehow morph into like an eighth man, a seventh, eighth man that's like reliable on an okay team, like that's kind of that's what we're hoping for at this point. But yeah, so BG, you brought up a good point. Let's talk about Miles Bridges. You know, I think that you saw two things coming up to the deadline. You saw Clutch controlling one part of the message, and then you saw I think in a lot of ways Steve Clifford and the Hornets from the Woj perspective controlling another part of the message, and it was pretty interesting to read kind of the room during that process. But here we are, and what the situation is that the Hornets they have Miles Bridges, they'll have him through the end of the season. They have his bird rights, so they can offer him effectively an extra year that no one else can, but he is an unrestricted free agent. So if there's a team out there, Detroit, with cap space that would like to offer him a lot of money, they still can. The card the Hornets hold is just that extra year with the bird rights, and obviously being able to go above the cap to re-sign him, which I do think the Hornets will be. And I think they're going to operate as an above the cap team going in to free agency, which I think we talked a little bit about earlier, but I don't know. Like I'm kind of in like holding mode. I'm just talking about on the court stuff right now, BG, like, you know, the back-to-back 40 point games, you know, it was a dud Milwaukee last night. He was good. He's an undeniable talent. There's no question. And he's still a young player. And, you know,
Only reason he's still in the league. It's the only reason.
Yeah, like, no question. Zero question about that.
Yeah, he's a great athlete and a great offensive talent. And, like, other than that, that's the only reason he's still an NBA employee, one that's set up for a eight-figure payday, or, you know, maybe more than that this summer.
So you know, I wish the Hornets would have traded him for anything at the deadline. Yes. And I think we kind of all said that in our pod before the deadline, but you know, they still have some chips on the table here. And the sign and trade is the greatest one. Certainly they can bring him back, but if Detroit wants to throw a massive amount of money at him, which there are some crumbles out there that suggest they would like to do that. You know, Charlotte can make sure that they get him that extra year and see what we can get back. I don't know what that is, but that's the only way I can calculate in my mind that the Hornets didn't deal him, because the reporting was all over the place. And to me, what that means is that nothing's true.
Yeah.
Right? You see what I mean? Like, yeah. like nothing's true here. There's a lot of conflicting opinions, and unfortunately, you still have to retain the asset because you think you're leaving money on the table or leaving value on the table if you let him go now. So that's just it's business.
I think to me that was ultimately like what it came down to. I mean, like the clutch factor, it was, I think, is something that was undeniable, and his ability to like veto a trade. It's definitely set up like a. It felt unique in terms of like a, you know, possible trade opportunity.
I don't ever remember a situation like it.
Yeah, that was, it's just strange, like a very strange, you know, way that you, yeah, players allowed to veto a deal. And obviously just given the specifics of Bridges' case.
That matched with like his, everything else that comes with.
Yeah. It was weird. But yeah, I think my read again ultimately was the Hornets were like, because it felt like with everyone else, like with Rozier, they got almost exactly what you would expect for him. For PJ, they got what you would hope they get for him, right? They got these first round picks. For Hayward, they got anything for him. So great. My thought was they probably looked around, and who knows if Clutch would have like signed off on these things. There's like a lot of moving parts, more so than usual, as we were just outlining. But that they just sort of got to the point where they felt like it wasn't enough. And I know we don't love, this should go without saying, I know we don't love talking about these things from strictly like just like deal craft when we're thinking about like Miles Bridges, who he is as a person. But ultimately that they were just like, well, we don't have enough on the table here to like make this right. And so if that's the case, then we're just going to take it into the offseason and see if we can set up the sign and trade. Or like, I mean, I guess there's a chance they could just sign him and he'll be back on the Hornets next year.
Yeah,
I really hope that's not the case, but that certainly seems like a strong possibility too. Like that's one to get ready for that reality if that's the case as well. Look, once again.
Right. To lay it all out, and then we can probably get on our way out of here. But when Brian Windhorst, who's to me like maybe the second most well-connected guy in the league behind Woj, or maybe the third behind Champs, is reporting like 3 days out, like Miles Bridges, he's going to get traded. Like that's all likelihood he's going to get traded. And then 48 or less than that, 36 hours later, whatever, Woj just saying, you know, Steve Clifford he has a great relationship with Miles Bridges. All, you know, like the Hornets want to bring him back. Like that is all bullshit. Like there is nothing but bullshit there. Really. I mean, that's just the way this stuff works. And that is, and right in the middle of all that is Clutch. And so the question that you got to answer is, what is Clutch's incentive for Miles Bridges to come, like to not be traded now? Because the Hornets still hold the leverage, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's a sign and trade.
Yeah,
best guess.
Yeah, it would be to be able to get that fifth year, maximize his money, and get out of town. The only way to do that is a sign and trade. That's the only way to do it.
If this was a situation happening like with the Knicks or the Lakers or
different
whatever,
story.
Like a big market, Chicago, like this would be discussed ad nauseum. But because it's in Charlotte, it's like nobody's like questioning it at all. But it's like, guys, this doesn't smell right. Like there's definitely some bad stuff going on.
Yeah, well, we'll have plenty more time to discuss those hypotheticals going forward. Last piece. It did look like, or reports I saw on Twitter, I did not tune into the like conference call or press call that Mitch Kupchak had, but it looked like he and Buzz Peterson were over in Spain, I believe, or in Europe somewhere to watch James Nagy play, the 2023 second round pick of the Hornets, who played very well at Summer League. I've not kept up with him at Barcelona this season, but would be curious to sort of like check in and see how he's doing. But he's a name that, at least at this point, you still got to consider him for the Hornets. He's a really impressive young center prospect that I would like to see in a Hornets uniform at some point. So I thought that was a little interesting. But with that, we'll go ahead and close out. Thanks to everyone who joined us for another episode and listened to us ad-free and early through BuzzBeat Plus. If you haven't, please make sure to check out Richie's breakdown of the Oklahoma City trade. He profiled each of the three newcomers from the Thunder. Lastly, be sure to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. This was a busy trade deadline, a lot of episodes that came out. So if you enjoyed any of that, please let us know. For Spencer, I'm Brian. We'll see you next time. Go Hornets!